Chapter 5. Tender, and I would do anything for her that I could. Her mother's heart beats as hers beats, and, if she suffers a pain, her mother trembles all over. If she is happy, it is her mother that smiles and is glad. If she is growing stronger, her mother is healthy. If she dwindles, her mother languishes. If she dies well, I don't know. It is not everyone can lie down and die when they wish it. Come upstairs, Mr. Frank, and see your child. Seeing her will do good to your poor heart. Then go away, in God's name, just this one night. Tomorrow, if need be, you can do anything. Kill us all if you will, or show yourself a great grand man, whom God will bless forever and ever. Come, Mr. Frank, the look of a sleeping child is sure to give peace. She led him upstairs, at first almost helping his steps, till they came near the nursery door. She had almost forgotten the existence of little Edwin. It struck upon her with affright as the shaded light fell upon the other cot, but she skillfully threw that corner of the room into darkness, and let the light fall on the sleeping Ailsie. The child had thrown down the coverings, and her deformity, as she lay with her back to them, was plainly visible through her slight nightgown. Her little face, deprived of the luster of her eyes, looked wan and pinched, and had a pathetic expression in it, even as she slept. The poor father looked and looked with hungry, wistful eyes, into which the big tears came swelling up slowly, and dropped heavily down, as he stood trembling and shaking all over. Nora was angry with herself for growing impatient of the length of time that long lingering gaze lasted. She thought that she waited for full half an hour before Frank stirred. And then instead of going away he sank down on his knees by the bedside and buried his face in the clothes. Little Ailsie stirred uneasily. Nora pulled him up in terror. She could afford no more time even for prayer in her extremity of fear. For surely the next moment would bring her mistress home. She took him forcibly by the arm, but, as he was going, his eye lighted on the other bed. He stopped. Intelligence came back into his face. His hands clenched. His child, he asked. Her child, replied Nora. God watches over him, said she instinctively. For Frank's looks excited her fears, and she needed to remind herself of the protector of the helpless. God has not watched over me, he said, in despair, his thoughts apparently recoiling on his own desolate, deserted state. But Nora had no time for pity. Tomorrow she would be as compassionate as her heart prompted. At length she guided him downstairs, and shut the outer door, and bolted it, as if by bolts to keep out facts. Then she went back into the dining room, and effaced all traces of his presence as far as she could. She went upstairs to the nursery and sat there, her head on her hand, thinking what was to come of all this misery. It seemed to her very long before they did return, yet it was hardly 11 o'clock. She so heard the loud hearty Lancashire voices on the stairs, and, for the first time, she understood the contrast of the desolation of the poor man who had so lately gone forth in lonely despair. It almost put her out of patience, to see Mrs. Openshaw come in, calmly smiling, handsomely dressed, happy, easy, to inquire after her children. Did Ailsie go to sleep comfortably? She whispered to Nora. Yes. Her mother bent over her, looking at her slumbers with the soft eyes of love. How little she dreamed who had looked on her last. Then she went to Edwin, with perhaps less wistful anxiety in her countenance, but more of pride. She took off her things, to go down to supper. Nora saw her no more that night. Beside the door into the passage, the sleeping nursery opened out of Mr. and Mrs. Openshaw's room, in order that they might have the children more immediately under their own eyes. Early the next summer morning Mrs. Openshaw was awakened by Ailsie's startled call of, Mother! Mother! She sprang up, put on her dressing gown, and went to her child. Ailsie was only half awake, and in a not uncommon state of terror. Who was he, Mother? Tell me. Who, my darling? No one is here. You have been dreaming, love. Waken up quite. See, it is broad daylight. Yes, said Elsie, looking round her, then clinging to her mother, said, but a man was here in the night, mother. Nonsense, little goose. No man has ever come near you. Yes, he did. He stood there. Just by Nora. A man with hair and a beard. And he knelt down, and said his prayers. Nora knows he was here, mother, half-angrily, as Mrs. Openshaw shook her head in smiling incredulity. Well, we will ask Nora when she comes, said Mrs. Openshaw, soothingly. But we won't talk any more about him now. It is not 5 o'clock, it is too early for you to get up. Shall I fetch you a book, and read to you? Don't leave me, mother, said the child, clinging to her. So Mrs. Openshaw sat on the bedside talking to Elsie, and telling her of what they had done at Richmond the evening before, until the little girl's eyes slowly closed, and she once more fell asleep. What was the matter? Asked Mr. Openshaw, as his wife returned to bed. Elsie wakened up in a fright, with some story of a man, having been in the room to say his prayers, a dream, I suppose. And no more was said at the time. Mrs. Openshaw had almost forgotten the whole affair, when she got up about 7 o'clock. But, by and by, she heard a sharp altercation going on in the nursery. Nora speaking angrily to Elsie, a most unusual thing. Both Mr. and Mrs. Openshaw listened in astonishment. Hold your tongue, Elsie, I let me hear none of your dreams. Never let me hear you tell that story again. Elsie began to cry. Mr. Openshaw opened the door of communication before his wife could say a word. Nora, come here. The nurse stood at the door, defiant. She perceived she had been heard, but she was desperate. Don't let me hear you speak in that manner to Elsie again, he said sternly, and shut the door. Nora was infinitely relieved, for she had dreaded some questioning. And a little blame for sharp speaking was what she could well bear, if cross-examination was let alone. Downstairs they went, Mr. Openshaw carrying Elsie, the sturdy Edwin coming step by step, right foot foremost, always holding his mother's hand. Each child was placed in a chair by the breakfast table, and then Mr. and Mrs. Openshaw stood together at the window, awaiting their visitor's appearance and making plans for the day. There was a pause. Suddenly Mr. Openshaw turned to Elsie, and said, what a little goosey somebody is with her dreams, waking up poor, tired mother in the middle of the night with a story of a man, being in the room. Father, I'm sure I saw him, said Elsie, half crying. I don't want to make Nora angry, but I was not asleep, for all she says I was. I had been asleep, and I awakened up quite wide awake, though I was so frightened. I kept my eyes nearly shut, and I saw the man quite plain. A great brown man with a beard. He said his prayers. And then he looked at Edwin. And then Nora took him by the arm, and led him away, after they had whispered a bit together. Now, my little woman must be reasonable, said Mr. Openshaw, who was always patient with Elsie. There was no man in the house last night at all. No man comes into the house as you know, if you think, much less goes up into the nursery. But sometimes we dream something has happened, and the dream is so like reality, that you are not the first person, little woman, who has stood out, that the thing has really happened. But, indeed it was not a dream, said Elsie, beginning to cry. Just then Mr. and Mrs. Chadwick came down, looking grave and discomposed. All during breakfast time they were silent and uncomfortable. As soon as the breakfast things were taken away, and the children had been carried upstairs, Mr. Chadwick began in an evidently preconcerted manner to inquire if his nephew was certain that all his servants were honest. For, that Mrs. Chadwick had that morning missed a very valuable brooch, which she had worn the day before. She remembered taking it off when she came home from Buckingham Palace. Mr. Openshaw's face contracted into hard lines. Grew like what it was before he had known his wife and her child. He rang the bell even before his uncle had done speaking. It was answered by the housemaid. Mary, was anyone here last night, while we were away? A man, sir, came to speak to Nora. to speak to Nora. Who was he? How long did he stay? I'm sure I can't tell, sir. He came perhaps about 9. I went up to tell Nora in the nursery, and she came down to speak to him. She let him out, sir. She will know who he was, and how long he stayed. She waited a moment, to be asked any more questions, but she was not, so she went away. A minute afterwards a Penshaw made, as though he were going out of the room, but his wife laid her hand on his arm. Do not speak to her before the children, she said, in her low, quiet voice. I will go up and question her. No. I must speak to her. You must know, said he, turning to his uncle and aunt, my missus has an old servant, as faithful as ever woman was, I do believe, as far as love goes, but, at the same time, who does not always speak truth, as even the missus must allow. Now, my notion is, that this Nora of ours has been come over by some good-for-nothing chap, for she's at the time o' life, when they say women pray for husbands any, good Lord, any, apostrophe, and has led him into our house, and the chap has made off with your brooch, and map and many another thing beside. It's only saying, that Nora's soft-hearted, and does not stick at a white lie, that's all, Miss Sus. It was curious to notice how his tone, his eyes, his whole face changed as he spoke to his wife, but he was the resolute man through all. She knew better than to oppose him, so she went upstairs, and told Nora her master wanted to speak to her, and that she would take care of the children in the meanwhile. Nora rose to go without a word. Her thoughts were these. If they tear me to pieces they shall never know through me. He may come, and then just Lord have mercy upon us all. For some of us are dead folk to a certainty. But he shall do it, not me. You may fancy, now, her look of determination as she faced her master alone in the dining room, Mr. and Mrs. Chadwick having left the affair in their nephew's hands, seeing that he took it up with such vehemence. Nora, who was that man that came to my house last night? Man, sir, as if infinitely surprised, but it was only to gain time. Yes, the man whom Mary let in, whom she went upstairs to the nursery to tell you about, whom you came down to speak to, the same chap, I make no doubt, whom you took into the nursery, to have your talk out with, whom Ilse saw, and afterwards dreamed about, thinking, poor wench, she saw him say his prayers, when nothing, I'll be bound, was farther from his thoughts. Who took Mrs. Chadwick's brooch, value £10. Now, Nora, don't go off. I am as sure as that my name's Thomas Openshaw, that you knew nothing of this robbery. But I do think you've been imposed on, and that's the truth. Some good-for-nothing chap has been making up to you, and you've been just like all other women, and have turned a soft place in your heart to him. And he came last night a loitering, and you had him up in the nursery, and he made use of his opportunities, and made off with a few things on his way down. Come, now, Nora. It's no blame to you, only you must not be such a fool again. Tell us, he continued, what name he gave you, Nora? I'll be bound it was not the right one, but it will be a clue for the police. Nora drew herself up. You may ask that question, and taunt me with my being single, and with my credulity, as you will, Master Openshaw. You will get no answer from me. As for the brooch, and the story of theft and burglary, if any friend ever came to see me, which I defy you to prove, and deny, he'd be just as much above doing such a thing as you yourself, Mr. Openshaw, and more so too. For I'm not at all sure as everything you have, is rightly come by, or would be yours long, if every man had his own. She meant, of course, his wife, but he understood her to refer to his property in goods and chattels. Now, my good woman, said he, I'll just tell you truly, I never trusted you out and out, but my wife liked you, and I thought you had many a good point about you. If you once begin to sauce me, I'll have the police to you, and get out the truth in a court of justice, if you will not tell it me quietly and civilly here. Now the best thing you can do, is quietly to tell me who the fellow is. Look here. A man comes to my house, asks for you. You take him upstairs. A valuable brooch is missing next day. We know that you, and Mary, and Cook, are honest, but you refuse to tell us who the man is. Indeed, you've told one lie already about him, saying no one was here last night. Now I just put it to you, what do you think a policeman would say to this, or a magistrate? A magistrate would soon make you tell the truth, my good woman. There's never the creature born that should get it out of me, said Nora. Not unless I choose to tell. I've a great mind to see, said Mr. Openshaw, growing angry at the defiance. Then, checking himself, he thought before he spoke again. Nora, for your missus's sake I don't want to go to extremities. Be a sensible woman, if you can. It's no great disgrace, after all, to have been taken in. I ask you once more as a friend, who was this man whom you let into my house last night? No answer. He repeated the question in an impatient tone. Still no answer. Nora's lips were set in determination not to speak. Then there is but one thing to be done. I shall send for a policeman. You will not, said Nora, starting forwards. You shall not, sir. No policeman shall touch me. I know nothing of the brooch, but I know this. Ever since I was 24, I have thought more of your wife than of myself. Ever since I saw her, a poor motherless girl put upon in her uncle's house, I have thought more of serving her than of serving myself. I have cared for her and her child, as nobody ever cared for me. I don't cast blame on you, sir, but I say it's ill giving up one's life to anyone, for, at the end, they will turn round upon you, and forsake you. Why does not my missus come herself to suspect me? Maybe she is gone for the police? But I don't stay here, either for police, or magistrate, or master. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.